Welcome to the Healing Grove Podcast. I'm Dr. Kristen Ryman, an integrative holistic family physician, author of Life After Lyme, and host in this virtual space of learning, healing, and growing. I believe humans are like trees, and our physical limb is only one of many. Health on all limbs of the tree, emotional, conceptual, social, spiritual, is absolutely required for the whole tree that is you to be vibrantly well. I created the Healing Grove Podcast as a place to showcase some of the world's best integrative and holistic medicine, to expose you to transformative tools and mindset shifts for all limbs of your tree. I hope you enjoy our conversation in the Healing Grove today as much as I enjoyed having it. So, hi, friend.
Hi, friend.
It's really good to see you. I love that you're in your studio. It's so beautiful and inviting. I can't wait to talk to you about this because we haven't ever had anyone talk about core strength or Pilates or dance on the Healing Grove podcast. And so I'm just over the moon that it gets to be you who introduces us all to these important topics. But before we do that, I'll just say a few words about how we know each other. So we go way back to little boys in lots of gear playing ice hockey and standing in the stands together. Yeah. Yeah. Now big boys who played, you know, this hardcore sport where all the parents were screaming, maybe all the parents, but us were screaming at their children to punish each other and got to know each other then. But then we worked together as doctor patient for a while when you had Lyme and you offered to tell that story. But just as a way of introduction, this is Marisa Cerveris. She is a friend and a colleague and one of my inspirations. And a fellow entrepreneur. She owns Steel Core Studio in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and she is a longtime dancer. And I'm going to let you tell the rest of your story because you're going to do it much more justice than I. So tell us a little bit about how you found yourself into the world of dance and what that has led to for you.
Well, I think it was predestined because both my parents were artists. My father was a pianist and my mother was a dancer, a modern dancer. And they were both at Juilliard in New York City, and that's where they met. So sort of like predestined that we're going to have an artistic family. No doctors for us, unfortunately. So my parents introduced us to all parts of the arts, performing arts mostly. That was just part of, you know, our life, everyday life. My father would start playing the piano more loudly when it was time for us to get ready to leave the house. You know, we knew it, when it became Rachmaninoff, we better get our butts into the car for wherever our departure was. So music was always very important. And my mother was a modern dancer. And so I used to take her class. She taught at a university. And I just loved moving. It was just who I was from when I was really young. But because my mother had been a dancer, she was very serious about when I started. She wanted me, my muscles and bones, to be strong enough so that when I started really learning technique and the rigors of dancing, that I wouldn't hurt myself. So I didn't start until I was 8 years old, and I didn't go on point shoes until I was 12. And a lot of people nowadays might think that's very late, but I'm thrilled that that's the way my journey went, because I never sort of, you know, took steps backwards. I always kept building strength and alignment and everything because my body was strong enough to handle it. So at 8 years old, I started organized dance classes in West Virginia. That's where we were living at the time, in Huntington, West Virginia. And I was just really lucky. I had a fabulous teacher who was very focused on alignment. It wasn't trying to sacrifice your body to make the line. She really wanted us to make the line that we wanted within the realm of what our own bodies could handle. We're all different. So if I make a movement, it's going to look different on my body than it is on someone else's body. And so that helped me build strength in what I was doing. It also really trained my eye. And now, with my own studio, I can look back and think that's where the beginnings of me as a teacher were born. She trained our eyes to be able to look at each other as well as looking at the mirror at ourselves to correct, to see what's out of place, what's slightly amiss, how could I shape my body differently to do that work. And I think
so I'm going to pause you for 1 second because I want to make sure I understand what you mean by making the line.
So if I'm trying to make a position with my arm, someone's going to come sort of maybe with their arm in this shape. We're going to use musculature to make the line. So the bottom of the arm is a nice elongated line, that the wrist is lower than the shoulder. It's not up here. See how that line goes up. Everything about dance and movement is about the shape that you're making. Now, my arm is going to look different from someone else's arm, but that's the shape that you're trying to make. Same in Pilates or any kind of even weightlifting. There's a structure, a line, a shape that you're making. That's part of the technique that you're learning.
Got it.
And I think that also transferred. The other part of my world is that I'm a clothing apparel designer. And I think that that also, my eye is about line for the body, line for apparel, line for the clothing that we wear. So that's how kind of all my worlds go together. But
beautiful.
I started training then at 8 years old. By 12, I had gone off on scholarship to North Carolina School of the Arts and started studying away from home. And then by ninth grade, when I think of this now, it blows my mind. My parents were so generous and brave to let me move away from home and go to school at 14 years old. And that's what I did. And that mm-hmm. was the beginning of my real dance education. And by 18, I had moved to New York. And by 19, George Balanchine chose me to be in the New York City Ballet. I was one of the last two girls that he handpicked before he died the following year. And I danced there for many, many years under the tutelage of Peter Martins and Jerome Robbins. And then I moved to Europe and I danced in Europe in a company in Madrid, Spain with Nacho Duato. I moved to France and I danced in a company there with Nanette Glushek and a company in Toulouse. Then I came back to America and I did a stint on Broadway for a while and I toured. I did Phantom of the Opera. And that's where I met my husband, was during that period. And then moved to Bethlehem and retired and started my second chapter.
Okay, so I just want to go back through the European tour and then the Broadway situation, because most humans haven't lived that, can only fantasize about living that. Give us like a little glimpse of, like, even as you talk about it now, like what feelings come up as you remember those places and those experiences?
I feel so grateful and so lucky to have lived that life, because someone is paying you to travel. You know, you're getting paid to do the thing that you love, and dancing and experiencing different cultures and meeting new people, and your personal growth just grows exponentially, you know, because you are not in a small box, but you are encountering unusual things every single day and meeting those challenges and figuring out solutions to problems that you have, you know. It was amazing. And I have lifelong friends from that time, and I still go and travel quite a bit to see them. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for that glimpse. That's incredible. So you're not in New York anymore. How'd you get to the Lehigh Valley?
Lehigh University. My husband is a professor. He's a European historian, and Lehigh University called us, and we moved here, and I had a newborn at the time, and we moved here in 2001, and it was an adjustment. I literally was on stage doing one of the ballerinas and Phantom of the Opera on Broadway until I was 5.5 months pregnant, and my costumes wouldn't zip up anymore. And they pad you, so you have bosom and everything in those costumes, the Degas ballerinas. You've all seen those pictures. And they start taking the padding out as you get a little more voluptuous in your maternity. And finally, when they can't take anything else out and they can't zip up the costume, you're done. So that's when I left and met my husband where he was teaching. And then we moved to Bethlehem.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. What was that change like for you, Marisa?
Oh, it's interesting, Kristen, because I've been thinking a lot about change and how we deal with change as we age. I think for me, it gets transitions get harder, but I also am getting wiser about recognizing if I'm feeling anxiety about a upcoming transition, I'm able to approach it with a little more wisdom than I could then. That was a huge transition. I literally went from 8 shows a week to a 4-month-old. 9/11 had just happened. We were in the middle of a place where I didn't know anyone. I had no team behind me. I was used to at New York City Ballet having our massage therapist, our physical therapist, our acupuncturist, our doctors, our orthopedic surgeons, everybody. We had a team of people. I mean, we talked about hockey. Think about a sports team. You have all these people that take care of you and keep you in top form. All those people that surround a football player when he's down on the field, right? Dancers are athletes. So we spend probably as much of our day taking care of our bodies and recovering and preparing for the next, you know, performance. So I had all that. And when I moved here, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any connections. You know, it was really just relying on all the information that I had gotten from all those people over the years. And I was so fortunate to have access to the creme de la creme of all those fields. And that's what helped me realize that I had a lot of information to give other people.
So how did you start sharing that then? Or did you, were you, I mean, you had a baby.
I had a baby. I had a very active young boy. And my husband was tenure track position at the university. So he was very busy and helping as much as he could. But I was going through this transition. So psychologically, it was difficult because as we all know, working out physically, being moving your body, it's a mind-body connection, right? You don't move your body, your mind is also not going to be fully there for you and emotionally. And it was built into my world that I worked out every single day. That was my meditation. That was my therapy. It was literally, you know, therapeutic to do every day. And when I didn't have that, I had to create that space to do that or and find a place to do it. And so for a long time, and I know this because I see young mothers here, and not just young mothers, a lot of women, I tend to think women more than men, that don't prioritize time for themselves. We hear it, we're told it as new mothers, sleep when the baby sleeps, you know, take care of yourself. Take an hour off, but it's really hard to do when you're in the throes of it. And I think that I didn't do it. And I ran on steam. I was lucky to have been doing it for 30 plus years beforehand, but eventually it does catch up to you. And I really was missing that. And so I had to try to find the environment to do what I did before, dance classes or Pilates, because I did that as a dancer as well. And Bethlehem in that time, it didn't exist. There was no Pilates here. I started doing yoga. That I had not done as a dancer, but I discovered yoga. And that got me back into my body again. And I started to realize, oh, wow, this element has been missing. And it's like the limbs that you talk about, you know, you have to be using all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Where were you doing that on your own or were you going to studio?
First time I did it was at Ocean Grove. That's a beach in New Jersey that we tend to go to. And there's a long pier. And I saw these people out at sunset on the pier. And I thought, I want that. So I didn't have a mat yet. I just took a towel and I went over and there was a lovely woman there. And she took me aside afterwards and she talked to me a little bit about it. And I started doing yoga. And then I found the Yoga Loft of Bethlehem. It was new. It had just opened up. And that's my world opened up, you know, for that.
I'm surprised we didn't really bump into each other there, but that's where I find.
I should have seen you. Yeah. You're so tall and lovely.
Interesting. I wonder why that is. Well, I only took like the level one. I mean, that's not entirely true. I used to go to Sandra's classes. Remember Sandra Kessel?
So Sandra did Anusara, right? She did the it was internal rotation of the, it's a little bit different form. I was doing more flow yoga. So I think it was just, and also time of the day, right? Whatever fits into your schedule.
Right. Right. For sure. Well, yeah, I love those guys. So cool. So you found yoga, you kind of rehabbed your postpartum self and mind with yoga. And how did you get to the place where you are now running a business?
Well, I think first what I was doing when I got here was making the apparel that I made. When I was a dancer, I got the same sort of situation. If I can't find what I'm looking for, then I go out and do it myself. I think you're that way too, right?
Yeah.
you kind of hit against the wall for a while. Why isn't this here? Why isn't this product or information around? And then you realize it's up to me. So I started making dancewear. That first it was dancewear that was what I wanted to wear as a dancer, that was going to hold up and be a quality product, but be beautiful and tasteful and all that. So I started making that while I was dancing. So people in the dressing room had to always be trying on my styles. It was just, if you're in Marisa's dressing room, you're going to be a model. And then when I first came to Bethlehem, Dancing with the Stars, do you remember that show? They started calling me and they said, we want you to make clothing for our TV show. And the first couple of times I hung up the phone because I thought they were kidding. They're like, yeah, we're calling from ABC. I'm like, yeah, sure you are. And then finally
they
called.
Just hung up. You were like, no.
I literally hung up. I was driving Julian to daycare over South Mountain. I remember this visit, you know, and she was like, wait, don't hang up. So, I made some of my apparel, the dancewear, and I sent it to them. And it goes to the celebrity dancers, the professionals, but also to the celebrity guests, like Buzz Aldrin and Pamela Sue Anderson. I mean, these people were with my stuff. It was a hoot. And they said, well, why don't you start making separates, tops and bottoms, not just dancewear, leotards and unitards and stuff. So that's when I started doing that. And then that sort of grew. I got another phone call. Yeah, I hang up on people a lot. It was the costume designer for Robert Altman, the director.
Oh, I love him. He's like one of my favorite directors. What?
Yeah, he's totally cool. So, his costume designer had found me online, my little tiny website, and said, we're doing a movie, called The Company, and it was about dancers. It was starring Neve Campbell, the actress. She had been a ballet dancer in her earlier life, and she was aging out, and she wanted to have something on film of her dancing. So she was behind this project that she would star in, and it was her and the Joffrey Ballet Company were sort of the backdrop for her story, her romantic story, with James Spader also.
Wow.
So they sent me Neve Campbell's measurements. And I thought, oh, this is pretty awesome. And they said, would you make some things for her? Right. So I did. And I sent all this stuff in, and they're sending me movie stills, you know, shots of her in the clothing and dancers and everything. And I sent a lot of things to the company for them to wear in the movie. Because what the costume designer said is, actually, she said, Robert Altman saw your stuff on the website, and he said, this is how I want the dancers to look, because that's how real professional dancers look. You know, it's not, because we know how to put things together to hide the things we don't want to show and accentuate the things you do want to show. So that's how that happened. And then that took things in another direction. So there was, I was not teaching. I was not doing any of my own, you know, work like that. And then I ran into the then director of the dance department at DeSales University at a shoe store in Allentown. Do you remember Sage Shoes?
Yeah. I still have some socks. I call them my residency entitlement socks, because they were the most I'd ever purchased socks for. And they were like $11. And I wore them. I still have them. I wore them during all my overnight calls.
That's amazing. I was sad when that store left.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I met this guy and I was somehow it came, I guess, because I was walking with little duck feet and he saw I was a dancer and he told me who he was. And I went to take a class there and I took one class and then he said, oh, you have to teach. So I didn't get to take anymore. I started teaching. So I adjuncted at DeSales. Later, I adjuncted at Muhlenberg in their dance department. And then the Pilates thing happened that someone asked me to fill in for a teacher at Lehigh University, just that noon class they had at the gym. Mm-hmm. And I never thought of myself yet as a teacher, even though a very famous dancer, Jacques d'Amboise, who was a huge male star for Balanchine. So many roles of Balanchine's ballets were created on Jacques. And I had lived, when I first moved to New York as a young teenager, I lived in his house with his family and with some other young dancers. And he would be in company class and he looked at me and he always said, Marisa, you're going to teach. And a dancer doesn't want to hear that. You're like, no, I'm going to dance. I'm going to perform. You don't want to think about the end of your career when you're going to be telling everyone else how to do it. And I fought that for a long, long time. But as I started to get into the studio and see the joy on people's faces when I could change their world, really, their bodies, their minds, their hearts, their spirits, I was hooked. And then it was from there just a matter of figuring out where I was going to do it, where was the best place for me to do it. And I went first, I am so lucky again, Dr. Chris Amato, who is a chiropractor, Amato Family Chiropractic is on Shanersville Road. And he was my chiropractor. I was building my team. It was before I'd met you and you became part of my team. And Chris just would put me back together. You know, my body was whacked out I had my child when I was 38 years old. So that was, you know, tough to come back from. And Chris just kept putting me back together again. And one day he said, Marisa, there's a space in my office that was a kind of a little boutique-y gym and that person's moving out. You've talked about having a little studio to help coach dancers. Would you like to, you know, try it? And I said, well, why not? You know, I don't have too much to lose. So I moved in and right away, poor Chris, I just started taking more and more space and I built a sprung dance floor, you know, and just was completely taking over his practice.
Yeah, but he knew, I mean, he knew what he was getting into. He knew you.
He did say, this will not be your forever home. I know that, but get your feet wet. I mean, just so lucky to have somebody to support you in that way. He believed in me. And I think that I've had these people like Jacques and Chris that sort of saw something in me that I didn't even see myself. I just didn't see it.
Well, it speaks to the importance of surrounding yourself with people who really get to know and appreciate your gifts, you know, like to build your healing team out of people who can actually see you and to show yourselves in that way so that people do see all your gifts.
And it makes it a safe place to be creative. I think in the world now, it's hard. You're constantly being bombarded with people telling you, you know, the right thing or the right way. But to have a safe space, to a sandbox to discover, well, what's my right way? You know, that's a really important thing to do, to have. So I did that. And I was first just teaching ballet dancers, young dancers like 12 to 16 or 18 that wanted to be professionals, but were in Bethlehem. And so they were studying here, but they needed another level of training to be able to go off to New York and compete, you know, to really be viable as dancers. So I started first with that private coaching, and I really enjoyed it. I found I felt more effective as a teacher in smaller groups, one-on-one or five or six at a time, than being in a big university setting with a big group of people, you know, with eclectic backgrounds and things. Mm-hmm. So I did that for 5 or 6 years. And then the pandemic happened and everything changed. The whole world changed. And what I found was there were a lot of what we would say we call pedestrians, so non-dancers, the rest of us, who didn't want to go to the gym because they didn't want to, you know, be have their life threatened with, you know, being in the air with other people. They didn't want to wear a mask. Even when things got better, they didn't, you know, want to have that restriction. And they just wanted to be, people were sort of drawing the drapes a bit on their worlds and getting a little more quiet, more contemplative. And I found a lot of people wanting to come and have private instruction. And that was a market that, a kind of clientele that I hadn't really worked with before, but it was my demographic. My body had changed. I was not a 20 something. You see on Instagram, these people doing Pilates, you know, wild and crazy things. Great. Yeah, that's not what I'm doing anymore. And I just found this community of people that just wanted to feel better. They wanted to move their bodies. They didn't really know how to start. They were too intimidated to walk into a big group class where you don't get any real, you know, taking by the hand and nurturing. And the business grew during COVID just a lot. And then I started thinking, well, gee, maybe I could take this, you know, to a different place. And this space became available. And I just, it was a real leap of faith. I had just turned 60 years old. Most people don't start a new business at 60. And I thought, if not now, when? No. Wow. And what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah. Wow. So we've gotten up to the present day almost. We didn't hear about the Lyme story. What is your relationship right now to your experience with Lyme disease?
I don't even think about it. You armed me with so much information that I knew at the beginning what it was, what had happened, what the disease was going to do, and how I needed to battle the disease itself, what I needed to do to recover from the battle with the disease, because that's hurting you as well. And then I just religiously did everything you told me to do.
You might be the only person who's done everything I told you to do, but knowing you and now listeners hearing about you, they're not going to be surprised that you like rocked it. You know, you're like, give me the playbook and run with it.
Well, yeah, that's what I appreciated so much. Good dancer, you know, tell me what to do, how many times to do it, and I'll do it. You know, yeah. So I had all my little bottles.
Yeah.
I was a little bit horrified when you sent me to get the blood work done and they take like 14 vials of blood out of my arm. And I was like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost all of it, but not quite.
Not quite. You left me a little.
A little something. Yeah. Well, you know, this is exactly the kind of story that makes me so happy and so grateful that I get to do the work I do, because when someone actually does do the work of getting well, they get well. They get well.
That's right. And when someone comes to you, you or me, and says, I want this shape body, and they say, how long will it take me to get there? And I say, well, that depends on you. You know, how much work are you willing to put in, you know, with your diet, with your sleep, with your movement, you know, with your regularity, your consistency.
Right, right. So what are people coming to you with these days? It's not the pandemic anymore. And what do you kind of, who's your typical client and what are their goals? What are they looking for?
Mostly what I'm seeing is an older client. It could be early 30s who has not moved. You know, they've just not been moving their bodies. And now the 20s are gone and they're starting to have some aches and pains. Mm-hmm. That's when it starts. But mostly it's older, it's 40s. I go from 40s, a lot of 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds. I have a 93-year-old wonderful client who comes once a week and used to be a diver. So her legs are very strong, good body awareness. And she gets on the machines and cranks it out once a week. we work with her on balance. A lot of my clients are starting to notice their balance is not what it once was. So Pilates is good to incorporate that as well. A lot of people who have gotten hurt at the gym or yoga or other Pilates classes that were too big for them to really be fully prepared to participate in a large group class. They didn't have the knowledge of the repertoire or of their bodies. So I'm seeing people that are very serious. This is not a spin class where you can check out and just willy-nilly, you know, go through it. I'm hoping to attract people that are mindful and serious about the journey that they want to take, which doesn't mean that it's not fun. It's definitely, we have a really good time and there's a real community of people. Sometimes I have to sort of remind people that they need to leave because the next client is coming. I was successful, I think, in building a space that's a happy place for a lot of people. And that was really important to me. So people come and they return. I don't lose clients. Once they come and get established, they pretty much stay. And I think that feeling better as they do from the first session when they leave and they go sit in their car and they sit a little bit differently. And they're watching, you know, I tell people, I warn them, you're going to hear my voice in your head. You're going to hear it when you get in the car. You're going to hear it at night when you're going up the stairs last time, you know, and you're going to make adjustments when you're in the swimming pool. Yeah. And just know that I'm going to be a part of your world now. And a woman today who just started with me a few sessions ago, she came back and she said, my husband noticed when I came home and sat down for dinner that I was sitting differently at the dinner table after the first session. And that's pretty much it. You know, you can't write it better than that.
Yeah. So what are some of the other, if we talked about limbs of the tree, right? What are some of the ways in which posture and strength, core strength and body awareness bleeds into some of the other limbs, the emotional limb, the conceptual limb, the spiritual, the social? What do you notice in your clients?
For me, and for what I've seen, they'll come in sometimes in a little bit of a slump. You know, they'll come in the morning and I can just see in their eyes, you know, they present and they're just the sparkle isn't quite there. And then they work. And then they leave and they are standing a little taller and there's a little more bounce in their step. And they're, you know, you just see it, the connection there. Mm-hmm. And I find even things for women, and we talked about sort of women, you know, postpartum and not taking the time to, you know, dress yourself nicely, accessorize if that's your thing, or have comfortable shoes that make you feel good. If you start taking care of yourself in one aspect of your life, I feel like that bleeds over and you will start to take a little more care with how you're brushing your teeth or a little more care with the meal that you're making because you're taking a little more care of yourself here. And it's not going to just affect you. It's going to affect your family and how you take care of them. And then maybe they will respond by taking a little bit better care of you and giving you that time.
It's about self-respect.
It is. And, you know, there are certain things that we get a license for to drive. You know, you don't just get to do that. You just get a body. Nobody, you don't have to use it. And you should. You should lease, you're leasing this for a limited amount of time. And the way you take care of it is going to affect your quality of life in the long term. And if you don't take care of it, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, your quality of life is going to go down quicker towards the end. And immobility, and I'm seeing this with a lot of aging people, they could have a better quality of life if they had moved more when they were younger. And that makes me sad.
It is sad. Do you feel like there's a point at which it's too late, or can people come back from
never.
The front of this? Yeah.
Like I say, this was an experiment, me taking on this new client who's 93, and she has some issues. She has vision issue in one eye. She has balance issue. But I call myself, I'm like a sleuth. I'll look at the person, the whole person, and it's like a puzzle to be deciphered. Well, okay, she's kind of listing to the left. Well, that tells me that something over here could be stronger. Then we start to address that with some attention and exercise. All right, well, then something else is happening. Oh, well, that's not loose enough. So we need to stretch that to sort of, it's like building blocks, that's your spine, that's your core. And if you take something out here, your body's very smart. It's going to remove something here so that you stay standing, right? What we need to do is push everything back in to give your whole spinal column length and strength.
Wow. And for someone who's listening to this, who hasn't moved or feels like they could benefit from what you do, I'm wondering if there are any people who shouldn't consider either coming to you or learning about, what would you would call this body retraining or reform? Like, I know you have a reformer, a few reformers mm-hmm. there. Like, what is this called if people wanted to kind of like dig into this and consider it for themselves?
Well, I think my approach to it. So a lot of Pilates studios are very rigid, and it's the Joseph Pilates curriculum of exercises, and they teach it in the order that it's given, and it's very rigid. I've preferred to take all the information from all the work I've done, whether it's the work in the Pilates studio, my work as a ballet dancer or as a modern dancer, my work with the many, many physical therapists and chiropractors and acupuncturists, all the people have taught me things. I'll take information from whatever person I need to address that particular person's needs. So I would say, sometimes I start extremely slowly, where the person is just lying down and I'm literally asking them to use breath to effort a very minuscule motion in the lower abdominals to stabilize the pelvis. And it can feel very slow, but people are completely absorbed and thinking, and the 50-minute session goes by and their mind is rejuvenated too, because they've been focusing so much on their bodies and not thinking about the grocery list or other things. And it feels like, gee, that's a small thing, but then they come back and they do that again, and we add something else on and something else on, and it's the consistency of it. Who should not come to me? Well, we haven't talked about osteoporosis. I have osteoporosis, severe osteoporosis, but I'm choosing to keep my body strong, keep taxing the bones, keep getting them to create new bone by keeping the muscles strong and my metabolism working. I think that's the best defense among, there's certainly other things you can do as well. So we can work with that demographic also. I think if you have an injury that is not been treated, if you have a rotator cuff that needs surgery, then coming to Pilates beforehand is not necessarily prohibited, because you could be strengthening other things and we'll leave that shoulder alone before you go into your surgery. I'll tell you a quick aside. In the 90s, I was dancing and I was in a very high point in my career, New York City Ballet. I was getting lots of great roles, and I was dancing so much that underneath near my Achilles tendon, but towards the front of my ankle, I was having a real problem with the tendon that ran under my foot. They said, you can take, 6 months off and it'll probably heal itself. And I said, I can't take 6 months off right now. It's just not the time. So I ended up having to have a surgery, a microsurgery for it. I had 3 months between the surgery and when a pas de deux of me and this lovely young male dancer were going to be on the stage at New York State Theater at Lincoln Center. And they were tons of women waiting for that role and chomping at the bit to take it. And I said, no, I'm gonna make it. So I used Pilates. And as soon as my foot was wrapped enough from the surgery, I came and I got into the reformers, on the reformers. And I was able to, you know, put the strap higher up on my ankle. And I did a whole workout for the whole rest of my body, except my foot, leaving it alone. And when that was healed enough, I started using the machine to be able to do weight, like weight bearing exercises, but horizontal. So it was not my whole body weight on it. It was re-educating this new foot of mine. And I kept going, And finally, when it was time for me to put on my point shoes again, I put my point shoes on and I used the Pilates reformer to rehabilitate and get me back doing that. Finally, when I was able to stand up and do my first bar about 3 weeks before the performance, I was so strong that I wasn't taxing the muscles and the injury part. And I was able to do it. So that's just, you know, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, take someone else through that, but I tried it and it worked.
We all are a little bit more cavalier with ourselves than with our clients, I think.
Yes.
So it sounds like the reformer pretty much saved your pas de deux.
Totally.
What would your life be without reformers?
The first time I was introduced to it was Mikhail Baryshnikov, the dancer. He was the head of American Ballet Theater, and he was interested in me for the company. I was still in the School of American Ballet. He didn't like the way my physique was from my waist to my knees. I was rounder, my Italian background. And he wanted me to change the shape, the line of that part of my body. And he told me to try Pilates. And I'd never heard of it. And this was back in the early 80s. So I went and took my first class. And that literally was my whole career. My whole professional life was always using the machines. Now it's much more mainstream. And now it's in the curriculum of a lot of places for dancers. So I think it's great cross training. Dancers do cross training now, like and other athletes, you know, dancers do that as well. They do yoga, they do weight training, they do, you know, lots of other things. It was pretty new back then, but Balanchine promoted it. And I think that the other thing that's really great about Pilates is it, you know, your both sides of your body are not the same. Your right eye is not the same as your left, you know, same thing for all your muscles and everything. So what Pilates does, because you're working symmetrically, you can look and see in the client, oh, you're favoring this side. Let's do a little more work on that side. So you balance out your body. So it brings you more balance and symmetry. And I think that really, it's a metaphor, but brings balance and symmetry to your life as well. And when you have an injury, say you're a baseball player, I have a lot of golfers, a lot of men who golf, and they do the same thing, same swing, same way. Well, you have to do something to spiral the other way, or your back is going to literally change its structure by your constantly doing something. Dancers, the same thing. If you're doing a performance of Nutcracker 38 times in a row in a show, and you're on the same leg, jumping off the same leg, well, that other leg is not doing the work. So you need to, you know, work on it with Pilates.
Find balance.
Yeah.
So if someone wanted to work with you, how could they get in touch with you? What's the best way for someone to take that next step in your direction?
So if they just go to steelcorestudio.com, the website. There's two parts to the website. One is the clothing, the apparel, and the other is the studio. And they can just click on the studio side and it'll have a listing of our schedule of the classes. We're about to start more group classes so they can sign up. There's introductory classes for a half an hour to just come in and try sitting, you know, being on pieces of equipment to see what it is. So it's not at all scary or intimidating. I don't want people to have that concern. We're very friendly. And then we're going to have group classes too. So there'll be groups of 4 people, 6 people. We'll have mat classes starting up, all that starting in September, and the schedule will be posted there. And they can book online or people can reach me through email from the website.
Awesome. Awesome. So is there anything that we haven't talked about that you feel would be important to share about what you do or what you know or what you've learned that could impact someone who's trying to stay as healthy as possible or get well again after an injury or an illness? What would be some final messages that we haven't covered yet?
I think people have to be careful. There's so much noise out there about what we should do and take this, you know, vitamin or that. I think it's important to trust yourself as well, to try something and see if it, how it feels for you and how it feels for you in this season of your life. And if you're looking for something, try it, but you're your own best judge. You know, don't try to fit a, you know, square peg into a round hole. There are lots of different ways of moving your body. This is what I've chosen, but that you move is the important thing. So, you know, if I can help give you a little nudge into the world of movement and then you go off somewhere else, great. You've got a little more information than when you started. Just take that first step.
I love it. Well, thank you again, Marisa. This has been great. I really appreciate you for sharing your time and your wisdom with us.
And my pleasure. It's really fun to see you. Thanks, Kristen.
You're welcome. Take care.
You too.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Healing Grove podcast. If you liked it, please be sure to like and subscribe. And if you want to deepen your experience further, consider grabbing a copy of the Healing Grove playbook. With journal prompts for this podcast and 41 others, it's the perfect place to record your learnings, keep track of the tools you explore, and reflect on your own experience. Finally, it's important to mention that even though I am a doctor, nothing you hear on this podcast, whether from myself or my guests, constitutes medical advice. Any intervention you try should always be discussed with and supervised by a trusted member of your own healing team. Thanks for listening, and see you next time in the Healing Grove.